Our last excellent podcast, award-winning podcast.
What awards have you won?
Oh, we won lots. We won the Telosian Award. We took ninth place in the Bat Left tournament. We won a Webby. We won a Channy. We won a Potty.
Are there really potties?
Are you insane?
They are insane!
In the hands of an adolescent.
It is a cellular peptide cake.
Inaccurate. But Red Frosting.
It does like you.
Mr. Kim.
Hi, Christopher. I'm Nero.
But anyway, to our intrepid viewers, our intrepid listeners, I'm Mike McCafferty.
Yes, I'm Ken Miller.
And I'm Jason McCarris.
And this is a podcast called I Just Want to Talk About Star Trek, where two out of the three of us want to talk about Star Trek, and one of us refuses to be seen and instead has lunch and tea. She times it.
I have no makeup on. I'm putting makeup on while we talk.
Put your makeup on and then come on, because we all want to see
and
this.
And I still look awful, so I don't. I got the camera.
I'm wearing these gigantic glowing earphones now, so I'm embracing it. See, like mine have a little glowing now.
Yeah.
But
Mike's
that's
Fortnite while he's doing the podcast.
Yeah,
I've got someone play Fortnite.
I've got my Fortnite stream. I got to keep that going. You know, hey guys, what's up? Welcome to Fortnite All Night. I'm Mike McCafferty, and we are starting out at Ragged Rocks. I watch a guy watching a guy playing Fortnite. Yep. But speaking of people watching other people live their lives, what a wonderful segue into our Telosian episode.
Yes.
Which is titled, Kim?
I'm putting makeup on.
The Sounds of Thunder.
Yes.
We're doing a podcast.
I'm listening.
Oh, gosh. Well,
eating, having tea, and doing your makeup.
Kim...
Well,
we expect our listeners.
It sounds crazy, but you open your big mouth.
When you listed,
putting
it
on makeup,
crazy.
You're eating and you're drinking tea,
I'm
and you're saying,
eating.
"I'm listening. I don't need you to listen. I need you to talk."
Sometimes I think life is just a Telosian illusion.
If it was, it would go much smoother.
Yeah,
you know the title.
I do know the title, The Sounds of Thunder.
The Telosian illusion would go something like us having a smooth podcast, and then when they take it away, Kim's eating and putting on makeup.
I have a giant hump on my shoulder.
They didn't know how to feed or put makeup on me, Captain. This is
but
the best they could do.
They added this crazy hump that none of them have, but I have.
Yeah. What if we put a hump on this person? That seems to be the right thing.
And Zach Cotty's over there with things, you know... pulsing in his head.
Pulsing veins, not yeah. Speaking, but we can hear him.
They didn't really pulse in the new Star Trek. It's more like the electrical impulses flowing through them.
Yeah, they're kind of like ripples or waves going through their head. Yeah. They also seem to be like CGI'd, like very fuzzy. It was almost like they were like kind of like in a dreamlike fuzz to complement the constant turning of the camera when we were on the Discovery.
I did appreciate them going to the ancient language.
Oh, yeah, that was fine. I mean, they did that in the original episode, too, so it was fine.
Well, there was a lot of kind of rehashing exactly what happened in the other episode, too, which was a little weird. I mean, I loved all the references to it, but when they started, like, doing the exact same thing all the time.
Like
Vina
what are you
just revealing her face. Everything was, like, totally... It was the episode.
Oh, well...
It's for all these yahoos that never seen it, I guess.
I know, people who have never seen, like,
the
actual...
They're not making a show for people who've never seen Star Trek before, period. They're making it for the fans and people who've seen Star Trek, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, I in the recap, did they show her all...
Yes.
All,
no, they didn't show her Mangle.
Okay,
her
so they did owe that.
Pretty face. Which I know you really enjoyed that. Well, first of all, tell us why you liked that first part so much with the original Trek stuff.
You know, I liked it. I probably like 80% liked it and 20% disliked it. I appreciated that they finally embraced Star Trek, that they said previously on Star Trek, and then they show all of this stuff, and then they just hard cut to Christopher Pike. Like, okay, great. This is the same universe, right?
Right.
The thing I didn't like is the way they edited it and the way they added sound effects, kind of like these kind of goofy 60s boing sound effects, like even more so that are in the actual episode, makes it sound as though this is so ridiculous that maybe the pilot is a dream. It's his interpretation of what happened, and that what's happening right now is the real thing. Like they have, it seemed like they were trying to like this embrace and also disenfranchised at the same time. It was hard to describe. But
when I saw it, I was kind of confused because I thought, oh, well, are they referencing just the old, and they're going to come into a different sort of version of the universe? But then when she shows up at the end of the episode and talks to Pike, and they clearly had this relationship that happened in the old episode, I was like, well, they're playing it off as though it's just a straight continuation.
I think they're playing it off as a straight continuation.
Right. Which would kind of rule out a mirror universe, because the mirror universe, at least certain things would be definitely different, right?
What?
In the past.
Kim, are you still there?
Right. Yeah.
I'm listening.
What are you eating?
I'm done eating.
Kim is the listener.
No, but I'm just saying, when we're
She's
talking
experiencing
about
the
Kelvin universe and the different timelines,
would this
be a different timeline if the past was the same?
Well, I think that is the interesting question.
Because at least in J.J. Abrams, the past had completely changed due to the time warp.
Correct. Yeah, you're correct. This would still occur. No, I guess this would recur. It's interesting to like exactly when Spock shows up.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, I guess it's
that
before.
Rift.
Yeah, because he shows up before Kirk's born, so that was 34 years before we kind of joined the Enterprise. Maybe 22 years, if Pike had encountered the Talosians before that. But that seems also like a stretch too. Maybe, I mean, like, you know, Spock's pretty old, so.
This madness. This rabbit hole.
I know. Well, no, it is kind of madness because you start going backwards.
It speaks right to the key of the heart of what we've been discussing about the different timelines and is discovering.
Yeah, is this a different timeline?
Yeah.
Well, and it also brings forth the idea of the Red Angel. Is the Red Angel trying to correct the timeline? Are they from a different time? What are they trying to do?
Well, that's what they say. We're skipping ahead to the end of the episode, but that's what Spock basically tells them, right? Is that the Red Angel is only here to save humanity because it eventually gets wiped out in the current timeline.
With like big goofball missiles, which I'm, you know. Like, I have some issues with that whole situation there, but you're right. We are getting ahead of ourselves, but it is an interesting question to say: Did Pike and Spock visit Talosians before Prime or Canon Spock visited, traveled into this universe and rewrote history with Nero and all that sort of nonsense? Mm-hmm. Because then that would still be consistent. That would still hold true. It's very confusing now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that, but no, they say it's 10 years before Kirk and Spock, so no, it can't be, because it was at least, so Kirk gets the Enterprise, like, let's say 25, you know, 25 or 30, whatever, he was 34 years old in the series, so let's say 30. Then there's no way that this timeline is before Spock visits, in either way, so. I don't know. I don't know anymore. I'm so confused. They've gaslighted me.
I think we've put more thought into it than the writers probably did.
We have probably talked much more than they did. It's like, let's just have a Red Angel. Oh, and here's the hey, you guys, did you watch the first episode? There's these crazy dudes with big heads. Let's put them in. That's the writer's room. I'm 100% certain that's exactly what it is.
Speaking of crazy dudes with big heads, did you see the big head person on the back of the ship?
Yes, low gravity head man. He is back.
Oh,
or Seth Brundle flyer.
You know, Captain Pike's taking kind of a roll call to see who wants to join him in mutiny, and here he is standing right back there in support.
It's terrifying.
Yeah,
I know he is. It is funny because we talked about this. Kim and I were talking about as we watched it again. It's like there are so many more interesting creatures and people in the background of Star Trek that I so want to check out than like Stamets and Culber and Tilly. I mean, all these humans. Like, what's that guy's deal? What about Robot Girl? You know, I mean, we never look at these people.
Well, we'll get more vroom vroom next week, it looks like.
Oh, we're going to get it. Yeah, big time. Yeah. We are kind of working backwards.
Mike, that there was a lot of that even while she was standing still in this last episode.
Yeah.
I know.
I'm convinced now that's just the sound she makes when she moves. She has little noisy servos or something like that.
I feel like they put it in because they have to remind the audience that she is a robot and not just like some weird plastic creature. Because it's good makeup, but at the same time, she's not like 100% a robot. You know, I mean, she could just be another alien as far as, I mean.
Have to remind the audience that she's a stick shift from your car.
Yes. And if you go on our Facebook page, I just want to talk about Star Trek Facebook page, you'll find that. We'll put the link under every podcast. Check it out. See all the wonderful stuff. All right, but we are getting ahead of ourselves. So we start out with this. So this interesting previously on Star Trek kind of thing with all sorts of interesting, you know, retro look to it. And then we hard cut to Pike. Yeah. Well, first of all, let's... Jason, you said you liked it.
I did. I enjoyed it, yeah.
From the person who has the least background of this, you enjoyed it kind of...
Well, like, I mean, I do have the least background, but I have seen The Menagerie. I have at least, you know...
Yeah.
I've almost completed my original series watch, but...
Have you watched The Cage, The Menagerie, or both?
Both.
Okay, so yeah, so you know the whole
story. Yeah, we've kind of been over that too. So I at least had that backstory going in.
Yeah.
And it's pretty recent. I mean, I watched it maybe a year ago, a couple years
okay,
ago.
Okay, yeah, so all of this is fairly
it's
familiar.
Somewhat fresh, yeah.
Yeah.
So for and them Kim, to explore that kind of stuff, it yes. was interesting to me.
So Kim, the silent one, what did you think about this episode?
I enjoyed it overall better than some of the previous ones. I'm looking at little snippets of it now, and I keep finding the spots with the scenes that you hate with Culber and Stamets. You're like, we can just skip that.
Well, can't we? I mean, I'm. We'll go into this.
Yeah,
like the Culber Stamets stuff.
B stories going.
Yes, and that's fine. Like I didn't mind that one as much as the Section 31 nonsense.
Yes,
I mean, still don't quite understand. What I
kind of like that Stamets storyline too, and Culber's the doctor, right? Who uh-huh. ended up in the yeah. I'm interested in him being reconstituted and not feeling like himself, and suddenly he doesn't.
Yeah, you know, I kind of want to see what happens with him. He's gonna go back to Mushroom World, or
yeah,
he's gonna be someone else completely.
It feels like his arc is closing out very quickly. It feels like he's going to be done by the end of the season because he is. I mean, they did a lot. We didn't talk about this, but in the previous one when they went into Mushroom Land, they did a lot to unring the bell of killing him in the first season. Mm-hmm. They went to extraordinary lengths to undo that kind of capricious move of Vok kills Culbert for no good reason other than
that they needed it.
It's shocking in the moment.
Well, and the writers, on the after shows and stuff, I remember at the time, the writers, they were very coy, and the actor was very coy. I'm blanking on his name at the moment. But they were all saying, like, he's dead, but that's not the end of me on the show. So you knew he was coming back, and we thought, oh, dream sequences, whatever. And then it kept getting bigger and bigger. Okay, now he's actually alive in the mycelium network, and now he's back on the Enterprise.
Drilled in the temple.
Yes.
Tilly getting Black and Decker drilled in the head so that Tig could put a thing in her head to get her to go inside the big mushroom monster and find Culber. I mean,
you just brought up a good point. Tig's been missing for like 3-4 episodes now, right?
Good. I find her character very annoying.
Okay. Well, yeah. Lean into that. Why?
Oh, gosh. Why?
Yes. Yeah.
The monotone, the snarkiness. Comedy isn't really my taste. I'm sure some people enjoy her, but I just find her very tiresome.
Well, Jason and I are sort of like...
I know your friend.
We're like secondary friends, so we have to kind of ease off, but
yeah.
I would like to see a couple more layers to her, writing-wise. Mm-hmm. I think she's a good actress, and she could be a lot of fun, but...
I will concede to the Doctor that her character is kind of like an unexplained genius who knows everything. She's, you know, an engineer, but also saved all these people... with medicine that she wasn't trained for and knows everything about everything, which is kind of a little annoying.
There are a lot of unexplained geniuses in Discovery. There's a lot of people who are just really, really good at what they do and can just waltz into any situation, including Emperor Giorgio, who suddenly is completely forgiven, and Vok. I mean,
right,
all these
people, she's a good guy and, you know, graces Michael Burnham and they give each other a look. And
I know. Yeah. So there's a lot of those kind of characters floating around, but I mean the Culbert story did take it. It was interesting to watch. It was kind of him confronting coming back from mushroom madness, and
it's kind of like Reaper madness.
Looking like Riker from the Genesis episode where he turns into Neanderthal. We talked about this. Did we talk about this before? Maybe we didn't. But like he looks like a total monster. I'm like he deserves to be here, but. They bring him out, and it's interesting that they didn't totally unring the bell, and there is an interesting backstory to him now, and I feel like he's probably not going to be around for long.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, we were talking about something right before we started. I'm sorry, Doctor, were you saying something?
Oh, I imagine he'll stick around. He'll probably leave the Discovery, but be around in the universe.
Yeah.
Since it seems like they're divorcing in so many words.
Yeah. I was going to say, Mike, when we were just before we started, you were starting to give me your analysis, and you want to do a deep dive here on was it sparked by the robots who were cleaning up after the fight?
Yes. I'm going to deep dive into that later, so we'll hold on to that. I don't want to. Yeah, I want
to cleaning up robots.
Yes, it is a catalyst for curiosity. A lot of stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I feel like you, among others, Kim, enjoy my deep dives.
Yeah, I do.
And I feel as though, like, I watched that scene where these robots clean up the mess, which was just such a throwaway, nonsensical moment. Like, how come there's not robots everywhere doing everything? But it really sparked this thought process in me, which kind of made me say, oh, now I get why I don't like why some of these characters are problematic to me. So,
I'll just leave tease. We'll get that a little later.
It is a tease. Yeah, it is a tease. We are jumping all over the place, which thrills me because then it can be, you know.
Because it's chaos. I love the flying into the Talos 4 orbit and thinking they're flying into a black hole. That was
good. Oh, yeah. They almost went to Interstellar. They were.
Yeah.
Some
although, I didn't know if I appreciated. I know Spock was mentally incapacitated, but he just had just enough energy to jump up and slam the controls to push her through that without explaining anything or telling her it was okay.
Yeah, it is
terrifying her that she's going into a black hole and she just and then she just accepts it like, yeah. Well, okay, you must know what you're doing, crazy person.
Yeah, I mean, like he could have actually saved you more energy, fewer words. I mean, we're all talking about conserving words and energy now these days.
Right.
By saying,
well, obviously that kind of ruins the surprise for the audience as well. If you telegraph it too much, but I
feel like we all knew that was. I mean, well, maybe some people.
I didn't know.
Okay, I knew immediately. I oh, of course, this is what they're doing. They've made a like simulated black
hole.
But
instead of me being like feeling anxious about it, I was just like, what the hell is going? Why are they doing this? This just doesn't make any sense.
Why are they flying the black hole, or why are they going to Talos?
Exactly. And then when they have the big reveal, I'm like, oh, okay, well they're trying to set up. The Talosian mind.
But it looked cool.
Yeah.
It did look cool. I was like, okay, that's fine. But you're right. I mean, he could have just said, Burnham, go fly into the, it's okay, it's an illusion. But
so why couldn't Spock have just said, without going through all his madness, I need to go back to Talos 4? What? Am I leaving a big part out?
Because time is what he grounds his logic in, Kim.
Well, that's right.
But he was seeing all timelines at the same time or something like that, right? Because he mind-melded with the Red Angel.
Yeah, and so the only way to communicate was through a very oblique reference to through the looking glass and numbers, which he kept on spouting out, which he knew Burnham would figure out were reversed that would take them to Talos IV.
What was the point of them being reversed? Because she's the only one who can crack that code, apparently.
I know. And Amanda was like, I tried everything. She's like, no, backwards.
The numbers are reversed.
Google, look up these numbers. Oh.
I tried them forwards. I tried them sideways. I tried them forwards. Amanda, don't quote logic at me, Burnham. I know what I'm doing.
Try again, husband. Wait, oh, geez. That sounds so modern.
Tried unvaccinating him. It's just, it's too much science. there was another sequence where it was actually last week's kind of stall episode where they just kind of didn't do a whole lot, but they did a whole lot. Like they're kind of like setting up for this episode.
Forgot.
You guys remember last episode?
Remind me quickly.
They go to
light
Vulcan.
And shadows. Oh yes.
And then meanwhile they're examining the debris of the Red Angel and the robot squid attacks Vulcan.
Oh
and,
yes.
But
that probe, which has been modified in the future and then used against them. I'm like, what?
Okay, guys, what are
I
we doing here?
That'll be explained 6 months from now.
But my point is, they're like, oh, we should go. I should go back to Vulcan. You know, he hasn't seen Amanda in, you know, in months. Like, we just saw. I mean, like, it just seemed kind of weird that they would go back there. You know, it was kind of a big kind of spinning of the wheels kind of episode.
What do you mean, Michael hasn't been home?
Well, Michael hasn't been home, but she just saw Amanda. I mean, she was just there like two episodes ago. So, like,
when she gave her that stolen stuff from the medical station.
Yeah, maybe she's the Red Angel. She's all over the place. All right, so we jump. Let's see what. So we go to Talos. Ah. No.
Oh, no. Got distorted for a sec.
Oh, okay. We go to Talos, and then we see Vina. Mm-hmm. New Vina.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Played by Melissa George, who I was very surprised to see because she's been around for a while. She looks really good. Yeah.
Sing.
She has been. She was on Alias years ago.
Oh, okay.
She was like a love interest for. I don't want to get too into that. I just want to talk about Alias, but she showed up as kind of a competitor for Sidney Bristow, and she was an agent spy or something like that.
So Vina shows up.
IMDb.
And she's not bad. She's not bad as kind of. Here's the other thing. It's like when they hard cut from Jeffrey Hunter as Pike to Anson Mount as Pike, it's pretty good, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, they did a good job of casting. Anson Mount does a really good job of really epitomizing Jeffrey Hunter's Pike.
Yeah, he's good. I like him more and more each week.
Yeah, and the same thing with
nonsense,
his Vina.
No nonsense, no gimmicky, goofy. Like, he still has a sense of humor, but he's not hurt.
Well, yeah, except when he kind of lets everybody off the hook for fighting in the mess hall. Which is like, just this once, Saru.
Have to work this out.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, he kind of, because of the nature of the show, which has like the subordinate sometimes more leading role than him, he has to kind of have this kind of scared look, like, I don't know what's going on. Someone help me, you know? And like, where like he's defers to Saru, is like, why did you do that? Like, well, I thought it'd be a good idea. Like, okay. Just this once. You're like, what are you talking about? No, you're all confined to quarters, you know? Go clean up the stuff in the mess hall. Don't let the robots do it.
He's so mad about this.
I am so mad about this. Why? Like, if they make this giant mess, like, why are they letting the robots clean it up? Like, you jackasses had this big fight in the mess hall. You clean it up. Instead, there's robots and everyone's talking about their feelings. I don't want that.
Mike needs accountability.
I do. See, I'm giving away. I want accountability. I want consequences. I want people to earn things. That's why we like Pike, because he has earned his rank. He doesn't just, like, sublimate his commanders. He's someone who has earned his rank, and we know that he has a tragic ending coming up, so he's going to pay the consequences for what he's doing. If Valk and Colbert have a fight in the mess hall, robots shouldn't clean it up. They should.
Wow.
Okay, so you're more bothered about them not cleaning up their own mess than the technology of little Roomba things.
No, Zumba. Who cares about that? Zumba. You know, Arium's a big Roomba. We already talked about that.
She's a bunch of robots stupid. Taking Zumba class.
The Zumba Roomba class with Arium, featuring Arium. All right, so
okay.
we meet Vina.
Don't you think it'd be weird to have, like, well, it's not, because you see it in Next Generation, like, those guys that work in 10 Forward that are, like, clearing tables in their little green outfits. Like, we don't see those kind of everyday workers in this world.
No, but, I mean, we like, in Star Trek 2, we saw the famous guy vacuuming. We saw in Star Trek 3 at the little, in the cafeteria as the Enterprise is pulling in, there's someone who's, like, clearing the tables or setting the tables.
There's no bussers in this.
There's no bussers.
On the Discovery.
But
they
here's
need,
like,
they need some more robots. They need Dexter Jester's diner with their robot 50s waitresses.
Damn,
coming
he did
by
it
to set
us
the table.
Oh, Jason. No.
Star Wars infiltrator.
Less robots. Less robots, more people doing mundane tasks to teach them the value of working together and teamwork and all that sort of stuff.
The value of labor.
The value
now I'm
going
to go turn
labor.
On my Roomba to do the
I
vacuuming.
I think if you went to North Island Naval Base here, and two officers got in a fight in the mess hall, I don't think they would be the ones cleaning it up. Some minions would be doing it.
Well, then what were the consequences? What were their consequences at all?
They'd be court-martialed.
They might be court-martialed, yes. Don't you think
reprimands.
Because check out, like, if we were to pivot this scene, and, like, Saru, or let's say Pike walks in on this fight, and he's like, what the hell is going on? And they're like, oh, they were just, I was letting them fight. He's like, all right, great. Saru, Colbert, Valk, you guys all clean this up. I want this place spick and span, and you're not leaving until
because
it is. And then he walks
their
out.
Parent.
Stamets, too, because he just watched silently.
Well, yeah, I know. Stamets is like the worst, like, boyfriend of all time. Like,
husband.
husband.
I said to Mike last night, like, if you saw Sarah throw a chair at someone, would you not say something? Wait, let her. I gotta work this out.
Let's let this all play out here. Let's see how this goes.
I can kind of see that happening. I'm just going to back away kind of quietly because that chair might be coming at me next. So,
to me, the more interesting scene would be like, you two guys are going to clean this up. And then we have that scene where the two of them are like scrubbing the floor because this is a naval ship. I'm
so worried about the cleanup.
No, because
you're not
it's
worried about a timeline and blowing up Earth and Vulcan.
No, I'm
who's
worried.
Who's going to clean this up?
I am worried about this because this speaks larger. Because if robots take care of all what character suffers consequences in this show? What character ever has to clean up their mess? They always just like fly away and, you know, I mean, certainly not Burnham. Burnham only now is slowly starting to realize the consequences of her life. She's slowly, like, she does this thing with, like, she starts this Klingon war. She disobeys her captain, gets her killed. And then what happens? She winds up on the Discovery, second in command. There's no consequences, and at the end of the season, she gives this moralizing speech of how we have to be better. What have you done to earn that speech? Nothing.
Well, Tyler murdered somebody, and they suddenly put him in command on the ship. So not in command, but
Ash Tyler murdered that guy, murdered Colbert. You know, how are there no consequences for him? How are we sitting like being like, I'm gonna have to take away your badge and confine you to quarters, Ash Tyler, because you might have stolen some information. How about you killed that guy?
That was Volk.
Yeah,
was Volk.
That's like the convenient excuse for everything. Like
it's always the convenient excuse for everything.
He's going to steal all
the elevator
sorts of
door.
Stuff
sorry,
and...
Volk.
What? Yeah, what about exactly. Giorgio? What about Leland and Giorgio? And Giorgio is always undermining goofball Leland. You know, it's like I wanted to see how you twisted in the wind with Section 31. Like, what? You're fired. Then
what was
get
that
out.
Accent. Charlie Chan accent.
Well, then, all right. Well, so then, fine. Then I want to see how this.
Racist.
You know, I want to see how you twisted in the wind on this. It's not even that. It's just her leaning into this mustache twirling thing. I'm not trying to have any sort of like trying to imitate her accent. Like she's just always like just like this Catwoman like horrible villainous. Who is constantly subverting everyone's authority at every point and never suffers the consequences. No one in Discovery ever suffers consequences. No one ever earns their rank except for Christopher Pike.
I'm getting sort of sick of her talking about the mirror universe that she came from and how what she does in that universe to deal with stuff that happens in this one. It's getting super tired. Like, well, you know, in my universe, I would just kill them. All right.
In my universe, I killed them and destroyed their stupid singing plants. There's no accent exactly. There, Kim. How do you like that? In my universe, this is what we did.
Sheesh. It's taking an ugly turn. See, Zach, this is what I'm talking about.
You're the one who came in hot, and now I've caught on fire, and Jason's apartment's on fire.
He's literally on fire.
It's a lotion mind trick. Zach, I promise you, there's no racist comments over at Trek FM. You won't get this kind of quality over there.
No one suffers consequence. I'm trying to think if there's any exception, but I can't come up with anyone right now.
I know. Everyone does whatever they want, and then it's all brushed aside as they move forward in all of this. This is the problem. There's no consequences, and no one earns anything with the exception of maybe Saru and Pike. Like, Pike, I was like, do I like Pike because he's, like, the captain? Do I like him because I'm some sort of horrible misogynist, you know, like he's a white guy? Or is it because he's a captain who has earned his stripes and shown up here and he has earned this level of authority? As opposed
but
to Burnham,
I've heard you say that a few times about the in terms of he's earned his stripes and he's earned that rank and everything. But in terms of this show, Discovery alone, have we seen any evidence of that? He just kind of shows up and takes command of the ship.
But he's a known character in the universe.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
Like,
but I'm saying, but as far as the, you know, the in a vacuum of Discovery, we don't know that.
Well, that's true. But let's look at the previous captains or people in command of the Discovery. You had. This world, Giorgio, who gets killed. Mm-hmm. Then you have Lorca, mm-hmm. who turns out to be a mirror
Evil
universe
Lorca.
Guy.
Right.
Then you have Saru, who is fine, but then replaced by Giorgio later on, mm-hmm. mirror universe Giorgio. And then finally we have Pike.
who's like stable. He's providing stability to the show. We've all
established that. Like good or bad, he has to make they've tried for the past season and a half, or the past the first season, to say, we're going to try this without any sort of, you know, upper management. You know, it's no captain, just like we're going to let the underlings run it. And it's, they've never had a good solution for that. And ultimately, you have no authority at the top, and then people underneath them constantly subverting them, sometimes for good reasons, but never receiving any consequences as a result of that.
And I mean, that's very deliberate, because I do recall us talking about how they really wanted to emphasize that the lead character on the show is not going to be the captain.
Right.
It was going to be Michael Burnham, and that's why they had that whole arc at the beginning with her betrayal and her getting arrested, and we're following her, not necessarily the captain. So I could see why they might have that sort of underpinnings of there's not much stability in the captain's rank. And I guess it was fun for a while, but it's a fun experiment. But after a year or 2 years, it's like, okay, we do need somebody in that position who's going to control what's happening here.
Yeah, you want someone, and again, like I've used the reference of the West Wing before, where mm-hmm. they tried to have the president sort of on the outskirts, and that's fine, but there has to be someone who has the authority to say what you did was wrong, what you did was right, as opposed to, like, I'm from a mirror universe, you know, so, you know, I got to inject my eyeballs.
There's a difference between having maybe an unstable captain and just mad chaos the entire time, which seems to be what we've had.
Right. It was so much mad chaos, and then Pike shows up and he has the authority and says, okay, we're going to play by my rules. I will listen to you, and your ideas might be better, and I will do them, but at the end of the day, it has to be my choice. And most of the time, that's what happens. You know, every once in a while, like I said, what's that?
Cafeteria fights. Except with cafeteria fights.
Except with cafeteria fights and Saru. Who, yeah. I think Pike's kind of freaked out by Saru.
A little bit, yeah. Well, I'm mesmerized by Saru every time he's walking with his swinging his arms back and forth. I can barely pay attention to what they're talking about the cafeteria fight.
We were talking, Kim and I were talking that Saru and, I guess we already talked about this in the past episode, right? Saru and Giorgio came from the same finishing school with their saunters. They both saunter.
Sashay off my brief like this.
How many words? Yeah, sashay, saunter, catwalk off. All right, so... Now where are we? So now I've blown my deep dive. You guys have pulled it out of me.
Do we really need the deep dive now?
I was going to say, stop. You're blowing all your material right now.
Well, no, I mean, we might as well just keep on talking about it because this problem has cropped up in J.J. Abrams' movies as well.
What?
In 2009.
No consequences?
Well, there were consequences, but it was Captain Kirk not earning it. You know, I mean, Kirk just basically falls forward constantly in the 2009 film until he becomes captain. Mm-hmm. He goes to Starfleet Academy as kind of like this, like, hey, I'm a frat boy, and then constantly falls upward, subverting everyone else who is better and more experienced than he is, and just by happenstance happens to save the day. Mm-hmm. It's the Star Trek Beyond, which I like, Star Trek Beyond Burger that I like, where he...
The doctor's reaction.
Crazy distortion there for a second.
Oh, hear that distortion.
Yeah. I said Star Trek Beyond Burger.
That's what caused the distortion.
It's such a weak joke. I don't even know why we have to Star Trek Beyond Burger. Star Trek Beyond Burger.
So bad you destroyed.
Next thing you know, there's going to be a Beyond Burger that's Star Trek themed.
Oh, I hope so.
Enterprise stamped in the middle.
But in the 2000, but in the Star Trek Beyond, Kirk is finally a captain who has earned it. He's been through enough missions. He's been he's almost done with the 5-year mission, and he's weary, and he understands the burden of command. And that's what I want to see. I want to see these people who have risen through the ranks, who understand their place within the structure of a military organization, and only subvert it when it's absolutely necessary and are prepared to pay the price for it. So.
Okay.
Yeah, there
Excellent.
We are. Yeah. And if you have robots that are cleaning up your messes, you're never going to learn.
Take that, Roomba owners.
Swab those decks.
Yeah.
No Roombas.
Wait a minute. This is from the king of just flip the cushion you're so worried about.
I didn't want to note the irony, but you're
absolutely
correct.
About the rules and leaving things, cleaning up your own messes.
It applies to his children, not him.
Mirror Mike.
That cushion remains flipped. There's no consequences. But I earned the right to flip the cushion, you see.
Oh, God.
and I'm prepared. You know, later on, well, we'll go into this later on, so. all right, so after that long tirade we have, we do go into the Talosians' cave. We get beamed down in this cave, and the Talosians, they want to bargain with... It's a weird, interesting way to get the reason why Spock and Burnham don't talk anymore, as the Talosians demand it as payment.
Yeah, I was confused by that.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. Mike and I were kind of discussing this, like, how does other people's memories nourish them? I guess that's what they live on. That is like nourishment to them, experiences, yeah, or thoughts or something.
They've like evolved to the point where only other creatures' memories is what sort of sustains them.
I guess there's no, like, well, obvious food source on the surface at the quarry in Canada.
Yeah. Canadian quarry with, like, blue plants. Whether it's like, more of a, like, it's hard to equate it as a one-to-one as food. It's more like, oh, this is what sustains our existence. This is, like what gives us purpose in life, I feel. Is that it, like, we only live vicariously through others.
Maybe, like, the more intense the memory, the more it is nourishing, yeah, for them. That's why they wanted to hear that horrible or the story about the half-breed weirdo. Half-breed.
It is quite ridiculous to believe that creatures would stare at other stories constantly and derive some sort of pleasure from it, because I don't.
Coming in hot.
Coming in hot. I was making the analogy that we all watch television. I mean, this is basically their television. You know, this is basically their internet. Like, other people's suffering is their internet.
Like our internet.
Yeah, I was kind of skimming through here just to kind of try and get to what the doctor was talking about with why would the Talosians need to see that memory. And Burnham actually asks, says, why, yes, for your entertainment? And they say, this is how we understand it, how we survive. That's, you're right, though, doctor. They don't really... explain why. How do they survive on memories?
It's more explained in the cage and the menagerie, yeah, that this is kind of like their only way. Like, the way they described it there sort of felt like the Excaliburs from the Savage Curtain, or what was the one? Liaisons, which with Eric Pierpoint, where, like, we have to experience your culture before we understand it. But that's not what the Talosians did, because ultimately they tried to enslave people, breed them to get more human so they could live off their memories. It's not, oh, now we understand. Mm-hmm. At least in the Cage of the Menagerie, it was more of like, we want to watch you do stuff. So
at the end of Cage, or was it Menagerie, they said that humans are too violent.
To be caged, yeah. It was not worth it for them to have them caged, because, like, they were going to try and break out, so.
You are much too violent.
Yeah. I mean, because their whole plan was to have Pike down and breed with Vina or Number One or a couple of the other women they beam down, so they could have this stock of humans to live through their memories. Eventually Pike broke out, and they're like, if you're going to kill yourselves over this, then you are far too dangerous and unstable for us, so we'll just, you know, go with
Maybe
Vina.
Maybe you said this and I missed it, but did you say, like, the memories that they're receiving help them with the illusions that they're creating? Is that what the deal is?
Maybe. I hadn't thought of that, but sure, why not?
Kim signed off on it. Kim's fine.
We're already in cuckoo town, so why not?
It's all fuzzy, Dutch-angled stuff anyway. So.
Maddening.
Maddening. Now you go, Kim.
God.
Hot take, Kim, go.
It's freaking lens flare. Oh, so infuriating. So unnecessary. Like, the story's interesting enough.
It doesn't bother me one
crap.
Bit. The angles.
Jason.
None of it bothers me.
Well, every time there's a
look
lens
for
flare
it
on,
next time.
I don't even notice. No, I don't notice anymore, because it was so obvious when in the original Star Trek how crazy. I mean, the original 2009 Star Trek. I meant to say. Freudian slip. But you know how ridiculous the amount of lens flares were in that movie, and
subsequently
how he dialed it down.
This was definitely a JJ. A J.J. homage.
Well, I think the whole, you know, visual vocabulary of the show is taken from the Bad Robot series. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
too much.
I watched with Kim on Monday, and every time there was a lens flare, she audibly groaned or grunted. It was just like,
stop.
I didn't even pay attention to them until I was like, what? Oh, geez. Oh, yeah, there's a lens flare going over his face. Okay,
sometimes
fair enough.
They completely obscure the actor's face. It's infuriating.
Well, here's, like, aside from the lens flare, the camera angles, I watched The Favourite, Oscar-nominated. Yes. Olivia Colman won. Great. She did a great job. But the camera angles drove me bonkers.
Yes.
The fisheye lenses.
Fisheyes.
It wouldn't be the same movie if you didn't do that. That's the style.
Good.
Of your.
Well, that's fine. Yeah, I found the drama compelling in and of itself.
Yes.
And if you're doing that, then what are you saying? Like, someone said to me, like...
But the drama of it is... Well, I don't want to get too much into the movie, but it's a surreal movie to begin with. Not the way it's played by the actors, too. It's not it's not reality. It's not a period piece drama the way you would watch, you know, Masterpiece Theater or something.
It's something
distinct, and the visual style accents the, you know...
Too much.
The surreality of it.
I guess there wasn't enough surreality to it. Surrealism,
I should say.
The surrealism, the surreality to denote that. But what I'm looking at, like when I'm watching this episode especially, mm-hmm. where reality is completely off kilter, is why do we always have the camera in the Discovery framed at like a 30-degree angle? Mm-hmm. Because that has to say something, right? I mean, like, what if you have a clever or bizarre camera angle, then what are you trying to say about this scene?
Yeah.
Are we detached from it? Is it, you know, are the world spinning?
Skew. Yeah.
So does that mean that all of this is a dream to Pike? Does Pike actually exist? You know, I mean, this one especially, because like, if you are having that kind of like slight angle to the scene, then is this real? That. I wish they would have had
more wishful thinking on your part.
Well,
maybe it's not. None of this is real. It's all a dream. We can go back to the original Star Trek.
I'm just going to watch the original Star Trek over and over again. None of this exists. No, but I mean, but it is a coding. It is a visual coding to say, like, you know, this. Don't trust this. If the camera isn't on level, then what else is? You know, I mean, and if you're just doing it just to be artistic, then you're sending kind of these mixed messages.
Mm-hmm.
So
possibly
intrusive, distracting.
Enough said.
Yeah.
I will write something down while I'm eating and having tea and putting on.
I'm writing anything down.
What are you
I'm
doing?
I'm removing cat fuzz from my pants.
Add that to the list.
What? It's a quiet activity and I'm listening.
It's a very quiet activity. It's just distracting for us who have to see you.
Well, that's why I don't like to be on the camera during the.
I'm surprised you turned it back on.
You look great, though. You look great right now. I mean, this is, you know.
It'll be a horrible still photo of me on YouTube. Like,
oh, going back for
you
that one.
No.
I try to go back. I try to find good photos of you, Kim. I want you to know, or I'll put Jason on.
I believe that.
Well, no. I
need the link to this chat afterwards just for that still of Kim making a face.
Well, YouTube does that automatically, and then I go back through the thumbnails and I try to find one of me or Jason. But
and it's the one where she was making a crazy face like that.
It does that quite a bit, actually, for some reason. The AI seeks her out. I don't know why. It's the Arium of YouTube is looking for her.
So
let's see.
What
else?
Arium. So has she been? Has a virus?
She's been compromised.
Infiltrated by who? 31. Just
well,
called
but,
31 now.
31 flavors. It's the Baskin Robbins.
Section 31.
Maybe
flavors.
That's who's behind it. Baskin Robbins has always been behind this.
Baskin Robbins Industrial Complex.
Baskin Robbins and Beyond Burger. Two sponsors of Star Trek Discovery.
Captain Baskins, Admiral Robbins, this way, please.
All dressed in clown colors.
The creamification is taking place right now as we speak.
Although, if there was a Beyond Burger with the Star Trek insignia in the burger, you would both eat it. Come on.
Beyond Burgers are okay. Beyond Burger's like a 7 out of 10. I enjoyed it. It's not bad.
I still prefer the Impossible Burger that I had with Kim.
Impossible Burger. Ooh.
I had one at
Fat Burger.
Fat Burger was terrible.
Fat Burger doesn't... I mean, it's not prepared the best there. You get it at different restaurants, and they're prepared differently. And
yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. It shied me away until I saw all these Carl's Jr. things, and I bought one. I was like, oh, it's all right.
Oh, I haven't had the Carl's Jr. version.
Oh, well, yeah, we should
only
go get the...
Umami Burger made the best one, as far as I'm concerned. I had it at the counter. It's kind of...
Oh, all right.
But, yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us here at Beyond Burger.
I just want to talk
about vegan fake
burgers.
But actually, it does fit in because it's Talosian. The Talosians would make a Beyond Burger that we wouldn't know is real.
Synthetic.
So, yeah. All right, so...
So Section 31.
Section 31.
What's happening with Arium? They...
Oh, Arium, yeah. But in the previous episode, she got kind of reprogrammed, I thought, by the...
Sphere or something?
Was it the Sphere or was it the Squid robot? I can't remember which one it was.
The Oxana
Bayul?
No.
The Oxana Bayul. Something... I felt like it was something that was not Section 31, which was reprogramming her, with those little three red dots.
Yeah, I thought it was... I'd have to go back to remember, but I thought it was the Squid...
I think it was the squid that
it
like
came from the future, right? They was been repurposed and went back and
That thing.
Yeah, so it is the squid. So it's not like so Ash was like sort of accidentally framed for this and confined to quarters for that, but not for fighting. Fighting, you're off the hook.
Kim is showing us a close up of
Arium's little three dots in her eyes.
Oh yeah. Well, I hopefully we'll find there's only 11 episodes this season. We're almost done.
How many were there last season? 10?
I thought there was like 15.
Oh, maybe because they took a break and did half and half.
Yeah, they did like 7 and then 8 or something like that.
There's only 8 this episode. I mean, this season.
No, there's
been 8 so far. That was episode 8.
That's right.
The end. We hope you've enjoyed Star Trek Discovery. Please turn off your television.
Robots will clean up this mess while you're gone.
Oh, my God. Season 1 was 15 episodes.
I'm fine with those robots as long as they're accountable.
Oh, God. Lift the question.
Yes, yeah, you are correct. 15 episodes.
That is not an equivalence. You can't. That is a.
I want to hear your deep dive.
Well, you've heard most
we've
of it now.
Heard it.
So
yeah,
you've drawn it out of me.
Destroyed it.
You've ariumed me. Now I have three dots in my eyes, and I'm going crazy.
Whatever Mike said, we'll just decode it backwards and figure it out.
Yeah, that's right.
What's going to happen with her next week?
I hate robots. He loves robots through the looking glass, you guys.
I just hope whatever happens to Pike happens that he has the...
I don't know what's going to happen to Arium. I really hope that they don't just like make her like a pawn, like, oh, we had to kill her, because she's so much more interesting, having done nothing. Then all
I'm
these
shocked
other characters.
By this because I mean you've complained about her for like I don't know a year and a half now.
Just her funny noises.
Yeah.
Well, her funny noises and the fact that they're showing us this robot with it,
and
ever going into
it.
The fact that there's a weirdo robot there.
This might
when
be
Star Trek has
the impetus for getting more information about her if she's they might have an episode
next
about her
week,
now.
She's going to go crazy and fight people.
Yeah. I mean, in The Next Generation, Data was an android who was so. They had absolutely no clue what to do with him to the point where they actually held a court hearing to decide whether or not he was like actually a human, like he actually had rights or not. They did a whole episode. It's like one of the best episodes cited. And this is like, oh, we just got a robot over here. Guess she's all right. You know, I mean, so it's the fact that they're just kind of playing fast and loose with that. I like that they're showing us more of her. I want to see her. I want to see Giant Head Guy.
Yeah, Giant Head Guy. I'm waiting for the Giant Head Guy episode.
I want to see Lizard
Dude. We go to his home planet like we went to Saru's.
Ew. He's so scary.
Just a bunch of big heads.
Gross.
Yeah, he's. I want to see Lizard Guy with the sideways blinking eyes.
Right.
Oh,
they're just going to be sneezing constantly.
Linus. Oh, jeez. All right, well, we were talking a little bit about Section 31.
Yeah.
Who's always...
I don't mind them, but... I know you have strong feelings against it.
Now, why don't you mind them, Kim? They're always just like lingering around saying, don't touch that. Don't do that. Go over there.
Just like secret stuff.
You just like secret stuff.
Covert ops.
There's like a lot of thought stuff. Of this, and I like secret stuff. Kind of secret organization doing things. I like
Mission I think Impossible. We need to get the doctor a t-shirt IMF. That just says, I like secret stuff on it.
You know, when you want insightful... Deep dives and stuff. I like secret stuff. I think it's brilliant.
I like secret organizations. Like
make a photo of Kim with wearing a shirt that says, I like secret stuff.
MI6, IMF, cool things like that. I just like that stuff.
Trek FM.
I like Trek FM.
Secret organization.
You're working for Trek FM. I knew it.
Oh, shit.
She has three red dots in her eyes.
Oh, no.
She's taking this whole podcast down.
Come back with a rubber face.
all right. Well, I don't like Section 31 because they're just a bunch of bumbling goofballs who serve to have some sort of stakes to every episode when I think the episodes have enough stakes already. They're constantly being like, we'll get you, Discovery, you know?
Yeah, they're setting them up to be kind of a corrupt, evil organization kind of off the bat. But
yeah.
How do they repair that for this spinoff? I mean, I guess they're going to get rid of the captain and turn it over to Giorgio?
Well, yeah, that's what they're going to do. I mean, so Section 31 employs, you know, this deposed, you know, Empress of a Mirror Universe, which killed billions of people, and also Ash Vok. Who might be a Klingon, who also started a Klingon war, so, you know, this...
Yeah. I thought it was a bit much that they were going to dissect Spock's brain to find out more about the Red Angel. That seemed extreme.
Well, I mean, they also were complicit in the cover-up that he didn't murder anybody either, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, I haven't... If they're going to turn around and say, hey, guys, we were protecting the Federation all this time, and you just don't know the bigger picture, that's fine. But just so far, they're just these... Like, they're like chaos from Get Smart. They just run around. They just always are mucking up stuff, but they have no real consequences to what they do either. So,
Well, we will... We'll soon find out about Section 31. Thanks to the other people working for your managers.
Yes, this is true. Yes, yeah. I did invoke
broke
that.
The fourth wall.
Yes, I heard that in the last podcast.
If anyone else hasn't heard that podcast, you don't need to. It's okay.
It's 17 minutes of gold.
That was an illusion.
Kim makes a bed. Matt shows up at the wrong time. Nothing gets talked about.
We were under a timeline like every Next Generation. We had to clear out of there.
Section 31 was showing up. We had to get out of there.
Mike finally got to meet the sub commander.
I did.
Oh, really? Yeah, I didn't know this. Jeff Tyler? Yeah.
He had no memory of me.
No memory of you?
Yeah. Charlie
Brown?
She's like, oh, like Mike does TV and screenplays. And, oh, he also worked at Lamb's Flare Theater. And he's like, uh-huh. Anyway.
You would remember me because I fix iPods.
That's right.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's true. Yeah. So he has more of an affinity towards you.
Yes.
And he kind of remembers
Matt. I win people over by fixing their items.
You haven't been at Lands in over 10 years.
I know.
He's a constant fixture, as we saw in this last production.
He's going to know who I am. Jeff, turn over your middle cushion.
They have since recovered that couch.
Have they?
Yeah.
Reupholstered?
Reupholstered. The perfect crime.
Well, maybe there's a reason why they reupholstered.
They replaced the cushions with like these super hard cushions. I
love that we always talk about the cushion stuff, and there's an entire audience listening to this.
All right, so full disclosure, when we were staying at like Kim House sits a place, and they had a hot tub, and one day we got in the hot tub, and I got out, and I sat on the couch, and some of the salts and various minerals, bled onto the cushion and left like a little white stain on it. So, and Kim was furious at me.
AKA Mike left his wet items on top of the fabric for like overnight.
Mike sat in a wet swimsuit on like a velvety couch. What? You know. Aren't there robots to clean up after me?
But I paid the price for that, you see.
I was not
accountable.
You're so proud of yourself for that.
Accountability. There's no accountability.
His solution was just yelling at me to flip the cushion. I'm overreacting. I spent so much time.
I told you I would pay for the cleanup of that. I told you that.
You found out how much it would be.
No, I said it was fine. Like, whatever the price was.
The doctor was like, that's going to be like $600 or something. Mike's like, flip the cushion.
Well,
oh, my God.
You said it was like $30 or $40. And I was like, okay, that's fine. I'll pay for it.
I don't remember that at all.
I remember. You went to an upholsterer and you got
went to an upholsterer. Oh, my God.
Or you
but
called.
It's all fine. It's in the past. Well. Let's all argue for 20 minutes. Trek FM doesn't do this. I'm going to Trek FM.
Trek FM doesn't ruin couches.
Scrambram and I are going. Oh, is that his name?
Scrambram.
That's the guy on Twitter.
Oh. Yeah, Scrambram.
It's fine. You guys can all go over to Mirror Trek FM. Go to the Mycelial FM network. I'm the canon universe of podcasting here.
Nobody knows what that means.
There's no robots who clean stuff. I clean up my own messes or blame others.
There, that's the most truthful
thing
you said.
But at least I acknowledge there should be consequences.
Okay.
I'm evil.
I don't argue.
I'm a bad person because of this.
Ay, wrap it up. I have to go to work. It's 3:30.
All right. Oh, dear. Thank you so much. Did we actually talk about anything in the show?
No.
I think we talked about enough. It was a good episode. I really, really enjoyed it.
I like secret things.
Kim likes secret things. The cushion got flipped.
And Jason got in his obligatory Star Wars.
And I'm on fire right now. Thanks to the Talosians.
I don't know if this one's better than the last one or not. I don't know. I think we failed.
Well, I hope you can hear it at least. We're trying.
It sounds good to me so far.
Yeah, it sounds fine.
Usually I'm getting the dropouts and I don't get them today, so we'll be fine.
The operatives in Trek FM will let you know, Kim.
They'll do a sound check.
Their analysis, the audio analysis of this podcast is ongoing.
Trek FM is always right outside my house. Like, you know, you've got to do a better job on audio. Like, I don't respond to your authority.
Try again.
Bunch of robots.
I don't live under your authority.
You are your ice cream. Get out of here.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening. As always, this has been a thing. You may now file it as an illusion. And go on with your lives. I'm Mike McCafferty.
I'm Kim Miller.
And I'm Jason McCarris.
And I just want to talk about
Star Trek!
Don't you understand? When the train comes in, everybody rides.